Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. Here are your hosts, Bill Kennard and Tom Grandy.
Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. I'm Bill Kennard, along with our company's founder, Tom Grandy. This month's program is titled, How a Peer Group Can Supercharge Your Business. Tom, having worked in the trades industry for over 30 years, we have both observed a number of companies that have been members of a peer group, or what are sometimes called mixed groups. The common thread for many of these companies is that they're growing, making money, and on top of industry changes.
That's right, Bill. To my way of thinking, there's no better investment of time and money than becoming part of a mixed or peer group. Having the opportunity to share with and learn from peers is literally priceless. Although many contractors agree on the value of a peer group, they often ask questions like, how do they work? Where do I find a group? Or even, how can I start one? That's what this presentation is all about.
It sure is, Tom. Greg does a great job of answering the questions that you just brought up and a whole lot more. This month's presenter is Greg Hain, founder and owner of the Hain Coaching Group Incorporated. Greg helps contractors find and implement better, smarter, and more innovative ways to work. If you're stuck, he'll get you unstuck. He's a thought leader and an unconventional thinker when it comes to finding ways for contractors to better embrace our ever-changing world. His Creating Great Service training, support, and implementation program has been a real asset to commercial roofers across the country, helping them grow their service departments both in size and profitability. Greg is a certified NLP practitioner, a certified professional behavioral analyst, and an ICF credentialed coach, all of which he utilizes in working with his contractors. And now, with how a peer group can supercharge your business, here is Greg Hain with this month's Prophet University audio series presentation.
How a peer group can supercharge your business. I want to start by making some assumptions about you. First, that you want to grow, both personally and professionally. Secondly, you understand that you are going to have to change. Let's take a moment and talk about growth and change. Our economy is booming right now, and most contractors' businesses are also. Here's my question. Are you riding the wave, or are you actually growing? When the current economic boom subsides and another recession starts, are you going to go back to being the same size you were before? If so, then you are not growing right now. You are just riding the wave. If on the other hand, when that boom subsides and the next recession starts, if it's more of a blip on the radar, and while you may slow down a bit, you keep on growing, then you're not riding the wave, you're actually growing. And in this presentation, when I talk about growth, I'm talking about the real growth. I want to emphasize to you that you cannot lead others through change if you don't know how to do that yourself. So why all this talk about growth? I thought this was about peer groups. Okay, fair enough. So peer groups are ridiculously effective for people who are willing to grow and work on themselves. And they're nothing but a good warm feeling for those who are not. And you can get that good warm feeling by staying home and taking a hot bath. For a peer group to work for you, you've got to be willing to work on yourself. Having hopefully made that very clear, let's talk about some of the benefits of being in a peer group. Depending upon the research you read, you're going to grow on average 2.2 to 3 times faster than those in your industry who are not in such groups. Think about that. Peer groups will help you get unstuck, and perhaps more importantly, they will help you discover where you're stuck that you're not even aware of. You're going to be equipped to work smarter, not just harder. And if you do have trouble making that switch, and many people do, you can get help with that too. You will get truly great new ideas and resources. You'll get more of them than you can possibly implement, and in all likelihood, you could never even acquire without outside help. You'll get buried with that. There's no more reinventing the wheel. Not only do you not have to reinvent the wheel, there's probably somebody sitting at the table that can tell you what kind of wheel to buy and how to mount it. And last, you're going to likely develop new, significant friendships that extend beyond the work environment. So I want to share with you some basic terminology. When I talk about a peer group, I'm talking about a group of individuals that meet regularly to help each other. This is often in the context of growing their businesses, but it doesn't have to be. In the Christian community, there are, they call them share groups or accountability groups, but they're peer groups. There's peer pressure. And those groups are used to help you on your spiritual journey. So there are two ways we see these groups being organized. One is a facilitated group. The other is a self-organized group. A facilitated group is a group where there's a leader, and they are there to organize, orchestrate, facilitate, run the meetings, and even find members. He or she is not there to gain the benefits of membership. And such leaders are often trained coaches and are usually compensated for their efforts. In a self-organized group, you do this yourself. There's no official leader, and all responsibilities involved in organizing and running the group fall on the members. So regardless of whether it's a facilitated or a self-organized group, the groups tend to take two focuses. Some are industry-specific, and some are non-industry-specific. An industry-specific group will be made up of businesses that are basically the same, and if located in the same city, would be competitors. So for instance, maybe they're all Toyota auto dealers. That's an industry-specific group. A non-industry-specific group will be made up of businesses typically from the same geographic area, but who do not otherwise compete. So there might be an auto dealer, a residential GC, a commercial plumbing contractor, an office supply store, a florist, whatever. Also, in these meetings, there are three roles that must be managed. One is that of the timer, and it's the timer's responsibility to monitor member contributions, i.e. talking, to make sure nobody talks too much or too long and that the meeting agenda stays on track. There needs to be a recorder or a scribe that takes notes and records assignments and then distributes those notes and assignments later to the members. And lastly, a moderator or facilitator who actually runs the meeting, keeps the egos in check, solicits everybody's participation, and keeps the meeting on track. So those are the basic terms. There are two national organizations that facilitate non-industry specific groups. And at this point, I should pause before I give you this information and say that throughout this presentation, I'm going to be referring to a number of organizations where there are websites. And all of these websites are located on the handout which accompanies this audio presentation. So in terms of facilitated groups that are non-industry specific, the first is Vistage. The facilitator is called a chair, as in you sit in a chair. Chairs have usually been successful business people and are often credentialed coaches. Vistage has locations all over the country and in virtually all major cities. The second is EO, which stands for the Entrepreneurs Organization. EO is also a national organization, but it's a not-for-profit. The meetings are facilitated by one of the members who typically receives facilitation training. So while it is facilitated, it also has some flavor of a self-organized group. If you want to be involved in an industry-specific group, the two best ways that I know to find them is first to reach out to your National Trade Association. If you're an ABC member, the ABCs are big on peer groups. In the industry in which I do most of my work, which is the roofing industry, The National Roofing Contractors Association has a number of training programs for executives. And in those training programs, they talk about the importance of being in peer groups. So if you reach out to your national trade associations, you may discover that they could hook you up. The other thing to do if you're interested in being in an industry-specific group is attend a national trade show. Because people like me that facilitate groups will have booths there. They'll be doing talks. What I want to do now is I want to talk about the advantages and disadvantages of being in these different types of groups. Let's start with industry-specific groups. In an industry-specific group, the advantages are you're going to get valuable, specific help with your business from the highest 30,000-foot level all the way down to the boots to the ground, runway level, and everything in between. Virtually everything discussed will be of interest and relevance to you. The disadvantage of this type of group is because everybody in this group would be your competitor if they were located where you are. Members will be from a larger geographic area, often the whole country, and you will have to travel to meetings, which means fewer meetings per year. Typically, maybe 2 to 4. Though you can still meet regularly via video chat, and that proves to be very effective. So now, if those are the advantages of an industry-specific group, let's now talk about the advantages and disadvantages of a non-industry-specific group. You're rarely going to get stuck in low-level specific issues because all the businesses are different. You tend to work more on the business, and the meetings are local and more frequent, typically monthly. The main disadvantage of a non-industry-specific group is you are less likely to get specific help on problems inherent to your industry alone because all the businesses are different. Meetings will tend to focus on higher level issues. So let's also now talk about the differences between facilitated and self-organized groups. And the main advantage of a facilitated group is the group tends to be bigger, more members. The disadvantage of a facilitated group is that the groups tend to be bigger with more members. Think about that. So let me explain. Because the groups are larger, you will have more diversity and more difference of opinion, which is generally a very good thing. Because the groups are facilitated, the meetings will be of a higher quality and the facilitator is generally trained to bring added value. He not only can run the meeting, he can see what you're missing and he can bring that to the table. The facilitator will handle all the organizational issues, which is a primary challenge that causes self-organized groups to never get off the ground, and the facilitator will keep the meetings fresh. The main disadvantage of a facilitated group is that the groups tend to be larger, so there is a perception or there may be a tendency for less intimacy, and the meeting content tends to stay all on business topics. Personal issues are less likely to be addressed, and this is important because your personal life affects your work life. So what are the advantages and disadvantages of a self-organized group? Well, the primary advantage of a self-organized group is the group tends to be smaller. And the primary disadvantage is the groups tend to be smaller. So let's flesh that part out. Because the groups tend to be smaller in numbers, it's more easy to develop intimacy and personal issues are more likely to be discussed. However, because these groups are smaller, you will have less diversity. Think about it. Who are you going to invite? You're going to invite people that you like. You're not going to invite people that you don't like. They're going to tend to be like you, and that's not necessarily a good thing when you're trying to solve a problem that none of you have solved. Groups will have a harder time staying fresh because there's no outside perspective, i.e. a facilitator, to help the group move in directions they do not themselves see. And all of the organizational responsibilities fall on the group members, most of whom are already busy enough. What I want to do is point out some of the practical benefits of membership. and give you some examples. First, at least with facilitated groups, it's pretty easy to have experts and guest speakers, presenters come in. And typically these are people that will come in at no cost or at minimal cost to the group. And they will come to help, not to sell their services. And for you to bring one of those individuals into your office will cost you money. So there's great value in having those guest presenters available. But I want to focus on two other things, which is the sharing of best practices and problem solving. In meetings, you share best practices and you work on solving problems. We ask actual members of one of our peer groups to share their thoughts on the value they received. Here's what one member said, quote, "We're always trying to learn and grow our companies. Membership in this group has allowed us to sit in roundtable discussions with other well-respected roofing companies from all over North America. We've been able to share financial statements, marketing ideas, submittal practices, HR practices, ideas on software, safety policies, and even salaries for all positions. We've shared ideas that I never could have gotten without being in this group. When meeting in person 3 times a year, topics are covered in detail, and there's not one single wasted minute. I'm exhausted after these meetings." He went on to say, "Our company is one of the larger ones in the group, and we're reminded very quickly of what got us to the point we're at, which we sometimes lose sight of. We've been able to have 3 members of our companies come and attend and represent us, and each time they've come back on fire and implemented new ideas. I get so much information out of our group, for me to not personally attend would be doing me and our company a disservice." All right, so just exactly what do we talk about? So I have made a list of some of the things that have been discussed that I'm going to share with you right now. In the area of hiring and firing, we've talked about best practices on how to onboard people, which is a culture thing, how to train, which is a job skills thing, how to fire people, how to set it up, how to cover your ass, the timing of it, and so forth. We've talked some about exit planning. As one person in our group said, "I should have started my exit planning the day I went into business." We've talked about how to merge with another company, how to sell to your employees, how to do those transitions. There's been a focus on how to get your money out without leaving a worthless shell. In the area of staffing, we talk about, okay, you're a contractor with sales of X. How many estimators should you have? How many project managers should you have? How should that all be structured? We've gone through that in a lot of detail. We talk about compensation. We've talked about compensation for yourself, for your key people to better retain them, how to structure bonuses and commissions. We've also talked about what to do when you're making too much money, how to shelter it. We share and review financial statements because we have a facilitated group. We put out a standardized chart of accounts that everybody uses. And then we take all of the financial information that they submit and put it on a common chart of, put it in the common chart of accounts, everything on one paper. So you've got column 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, each of those being a company, and you can look on there, your company 4, and you can really quickly see how good you're doing. It takes all the mystery out. Excuse me. We've talked about insurance. We've talked about clever ways to set up workers' compensation and clever ways to set up health insurance. We talked about insurance captives and how to handle injury claims to minimize impact on rates. In the area of sales and marketing, we've spent time on how to upsell to existing customers and how to get new customers. We talk about how to grow. You know, there are contractors that want to grow that have not grown. And they understand they need to change their focus or their direction. How do you do that if you've not done that before? So we've talked about what to do and what not to do. We talk about safety. We talk about safety programs, how to execute them, how to handle injury claims to minimize the impact on rates. And then in the area of what I call execution, or how to do the work better, we've talked about the production side, the service side, estimating, customer service, all aspects of the execution of the work. We talk about purchasing. How to buy trucks and equipment. We've also talked about manufacturers' discounts and rebates. At least in the roofing industry, when you buy product, you get discounts and rebates from manufacturers. And what most contractors discover in peer group meetings is they're not getting all the rebates they're entitled to. I know of one large contractor that walked into a peer group meeting and discovered he wasn't getting nearly all the rebates he was entitled to. And the next year, he picked up an additional $100,000 in rebates that he'd been missing out on every year simply because he didn't know how to ask for it. You think that got his attention? So here is what another member from that same group had to say about a specific best practice. Quote, in our last meeting in Winnipeg, DJ spoke about identifying and drilling down the costs associated with recalls and callbacks. Over my 38 years in roofing and having worked for four different roofing companies, callbacks and redo work has always been something people don't want to talk about or track the costs of. Let's face it, that's typically not good. Salesmen just want it to go away. Fields typically ill-prepared because of lack of information. The office, the field, the salespeople all don't like to have to deal with an unhappy customer. Superintendent's not happy because he can see the customer's point of view and he also sees the field issues. He went on to say, DJ's best practice is to make lemonade out of lemons by thorough tracking, understanding, and reducing these costs and then letting everybody involved reap a benefit. We don't pay in lost revenue. This best practice has made a difference, and I know we would not have implemented our tracking if it had not been brought to the table in our peer group meeting. Here's what another member said about a specific series of best practices. And I would point out, this came from a company that was already very, very good at servicing their accounts. Quote, from the time we joined the group, we have cut our time to schedule in half. We've cut our time to complete the work in half and our time to bill in half. This is all because of the best practice sharing in our group. And incidentally, that was not the result of just one idea. That was the result of two or three or four or five multiple ideas that they got, each of which made a difference. So hopefully by now you recognize the value that you can get by being involved in a peer group. I've given you some ideas about how to find an industry-specific group that you might be able to join. I want to devote some time now to how to self-organize an industry-specific group. So first, you got to find members. How do you do that? Well, reach out to your national and regional associations. They may know of peer groups that you can join. I've already said you can visit trade show booths. You may be able to find someone like me that facilitates group, and you can join an existing group. But if not, join the national or regional trade association and get on a committee, because the people on those committees are possible group members for you. Network with your manufacturer reps. Some of them may have territories large enough, like a whole state, where you can reach out to them and they may be able to connect you with other contractors that you do not compete against that would be great fits for an industry-specific group. So let's say you've put together a group and you need to schedule a meeting. What you're going to find is this is hard to do. And rather than send emails back and forth forever, I suggest you use a package, software package called Doodle, which is free. www.doodle.com, and again, that is in the handout, which will allow you to set it up for possible times and people can show their availability on there. It really speeds up the scheduling process. If you're going to self-organize a group, I think that you need to have some sort of confidentiality and non-compete agreement. You do not want to be sharing your best practices and then have the people in your group share your best practices with other people, and pretty soon everybody in the country is doing it. So you need to maintain confidentiality, and you also want to have some non-compete, non-solicit agreements. Now, if we didn't see the value of this at first, but here's what's happening in our groups. Owners come to the meetings. Well, they're not going to hire away from each other. But we're going to have a meeting on estimating. And you know what? They want to bring estimators. And so now we're in a situation where you've got two or three times the number of people in a meeting that you normally do, and a bunch of those people are employees, and they're sitting there with six or seven or eight companies who are potential employers. So we think that it's important to have an agreement in place to protect Company A from hiring Company B's people, at least without permission. To do that, you need an agreement constructed by an attorney. We recommend Cottney Law practice. Cottney Construction Law's contact information is in the handout. You can email Trent Cottney directly. He'll be glad to respond to you. He's done the agreements that we use, which we're very pleased with. In the handout, we have included a sample meeting agenda for a meeting that will last a day and a half. What we find is that when you get beyond a day and a half, the energy level drops and the law of diminishing marginal returns sets in and you don't get as much value. So we structure our facilitated meetings for a day and a half. You fly into a city, let's say on a Sunday, you meet all day Monday, you have lunch catered in, and then you go offsite for a group dinner. The next morning, you start all over again and you go to noon, and that gives people time to get to the airport to get a plane to their home, and they miss 2 days of work. And we find this works really well. And we've got in the agenda some how we lay out the typical meeting in terms of best practices and financial statements and selected topics and so forth and so on. What I want to do now is I want to shift to a conversation about contributions and accountability. Everybody joins these groups to get help. Where do you think that help's going to come from? It's going to come from you, the members. So you need to understand that you need to give as much as you can expect to give, to get. And what I would say is that if you're concerned about how much of a contribution you can make, don't be. Typically, the people that are most concerned about that are actually the ones that are the best contributors. Peer groups produce peer pressure. So how does accountability get handled? So if your group is going to be healthy, accountability is something that's handled very carefully. And it comes about when people start putting issues on the table for conversation. We have developed, and this is certainly not original to us, but what I'm going to share with you is a model for how you can go about handling conversation on a specific topic where somebody has asked for help. The notes for this are in the handout. They start by saying, how do I X? How do I solve this? How do I do this? How do I make this happen? How do I X? Then what the group does, and you go around a circle, is you ask questions that are designed to gain clarity and expand understanding. You do not ask questions that specify solutions. So, for instance, you do not say, well, have you thought about doing this? That's problem solving. That's not what we do yet. You ask questions like, well, how is this impacting your business? Have you tried to address it in the past? And what happened? What happens if you don't solve this? And collect more information about the nature of the problem, what's been done, what might be done, or what they think might be done, so forth and so on. Then ask them if they want specific suggestions. Because sometimes they'll say no. Sometimes they'll know the answer by the time they get finished with the first part. But if they ask for specific directions, yeah, then give it to them. And after they have received that advice, ask if they want to be held accountable for the actions that are needed. And if they say yes, work that out. If they say no, that's okay. Then, and this is important, go around the table again and ask each attendee what they learned from the conversation. Now, what's interesting about this when you do it is that you're going to find that virtually everybody at the table can relate to the problem and will benefit from the conversation. But it's helpful to ask each attendee to talk about what they learned to help make that explicit. So that pretty much represents what I wanted to share with you today. I want to summarize a little bit. In the beginning, I talked about the importance of growth. I made the distinction between riding the wave or really growing. And I made the point you can't lead your company through growth or change if you don't know how to grow and change yourself. It would be a shame to get all these great ideas and not be able to implement them. And it would be a shame if that's because you cannot equip your people to do that. You will get more great ideas than you can possibly implement. And then you need to pick the type of group, whether it's facilitated or not, whether it is self-organized, industry-specific, whatever, that best appeals to your instinct, and go with that.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy & Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. Profit University Audio Series is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.